of mine, Larry, who was a good friend, but he was my director in 1985. He was an early adopter of computers, an early K-Pro user. I came to the office one day and he said, "Mark, I have a great idea. We were a small nonprofit. We're going to get K-Pros for everybody. We're going to do everything on the computer." Now, I had just come out of graduate school using IBM punch cards. I looked at Larry and said, "Larry, that's the dumbest idea I've ever heard. I will never use a computer." So I find myself still on that side of the digital divide, and Larry is having a great time this morning thinking that I'm here talking to all of you about social media. So, but I ended up coming sort of around to this about 10 years ago when I was doing a lot of health and safety training, especially refresher courses for asbestos workers and hazardous waste workers, many of whom were now in their 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th refresher class, and could repeat what they were going to hear from the instructors before you got it out. And I started looking for what could be something that might be interesting, different, to sort of make the classes better for the students and also for myself. And one of the things I went back to was old films that I used to use back when we had 16 millimeter projectors. We couldn't use them anymore because we didn't have those equipment, but we had old videotapes, and so I pulled some of those old things out, and the reaction was really good. Because people would see these old ways of doing things and go, "Oh my God, those people were really stupid. Why did they do that?" And we could talk about the politics of it, or the lack of regulation, or the whatever. And so that led me into sort of this. And when YouTube came out, stuff came together. So let's see here. So I have no conflicts, but I did want to give a great shout out to the folks from the NIEHS Worker Education Training Program, especially Chip Hughes. Because Chip was the one who said, "Somebody really ought to try YouTube and see what it's all about." And I figured, well, I'm like the biggest Luddite of the group. If I can do it, anybody could do it. So I figured I would try it out. And I had this interest in using it in teaching anyway for a survival tactic for myself and students. So I started doing this, and this was actually in 2006, but really got more serious about 2 years ago. And so about 2 years ago, I had this sort of these three things I started thinking about. One is I wanted to really see how much effort it would take to both create it and operate and run a resource library of videotapes, because this was something being done on essentially a zero budget. NIEHS gave us some support, but mostly it was... this was stuff that was done on my bus ride back and forth to work. Also was interested in the availability of historical materials. I knew things that were out there that I was using, but I wondered how much other material was out there, and could it be in a format that might be useful for trainers. So part of what I thought is it should be in the public domain so we don't have to worry about copyright issues. And I just made this sort of cutoff and said, well, let's try to look at stuff before 2000. Because after about 2000, that's when you started to see more DVDs and digital media. So I was looking back really at films and video, VHS tapes, if you all remember those things. Some of you may not. And then I wanted to gather information qualitatively, if possible, and quantitatively through YouTube. It's who is using this, how many people would use it. You know, so just to try this out, see what happens. So the first thing I really looked at was what might be possible to be out there, and I found this amazing and growing treasure chest of stuff. And this is just a list of sort of the first half of the 20th century of some materials that I've used that I've clipped out and used for small trigger videos and things that are up on my website. And the earliest one is 1912. U.S. Steel did a film to teach immigrant workers who didn't know English about safety and health in their factories. You know, and then Thomas Edison did a film on tuberculosis looking at TB in potters and dust exposure. It was probably silicosis. And there's a whole series of things here. So, and you can kind of look at the groups. There are industrial films. There are nonprofit films. There are U.S. Bureau of Mine has a huge number of films. The British folks are putting more of their stuff out there. The Civilian Conservation Corps, Department of Labor, Women's Health Bureau, so in the U.S. Army. So there's a lot of stuff that's been showing up. So this is a silent film from the 1920s that I wanted. This is a short clip that I did for use in training on fire hazards and dust. And given that just, what, a day or two ago we had a grain elevator explosion again, two workers died in the Midwest, that this is something that people have clearly known for almost 100 years and probably more. They did film, they did training films about it in the 1920s. So a use of this in a classroom for a short clip like this would be, why do we still have these problems today? Why are workers still dying from grain elevator and grain dust explosions, given when we had primitive technology, people could still do this? Okay. And then things I collected in the second half of the 20th century are some of these films. Again, things out of World War II and this wonderful film from the Pennsylvania Sanitary Water Board on water pollution in 1951. An amazingly modern film. Health Hazards of Pesticides from the Public Health Service in 1958, just before Rachel Carson came out with her book. And on. And all the way down to Can't Take No More and Worker to Worker and OSHA, the three banned OSHA films that were marvelous films when I started doing health and safety work and then were recalled by OSHA and sort of disappeared out of the public consciousness. OSHA doesn't have these on their own website now. Most OSHA staff don't know these exist. We've luckily got them up on the internet now, and I have a lot of clips off of these so we can revive and keep these going. And then a wonderful film by NIOSH on Alice Hamilton that's also sort of disappeared back, but made in 1988 on VHS tape. So there's some wonderful stuff here. And now we had a little trouble with some sound. This is actually a sound video, but I don't know if we're going to be able to hear the sound. This is metallic sodium that's being disposed of in 1947 after World War II.
Is this your most watched video?
250,000 hits, yeah. So they decided to roll it into an alkaline lake and let it disappear. So if you think about the use, you know, in a hazmat class, lots of uses about this. Why were they allowed to do this? Well, very few government regulations then. Why did it blow up? What's the chemistry of mixing water and sodium? I mean, there's a lot of really wonderful things you could do in a class with this.
So NIEHS approved this.
In 1947. This was the first one that actually went viral. And actually, I got a call from Chip early on after this went out. I put this up and didn't even think about checking. And then Chip calls me one day and says, Mark, there's a reporter from the Washington State paper who's going to talk to you because she found me, because I put his name at the end. So.
Well, they wanted to do the history of this disposal effort and sort of bring it back up.
Yeah, so it's a really cool. And this video has actually made the top 10 explosive videos of all time worldwide. Got 16,000 hits a while back. And I am famous among 12 and 14-year-old boys who like to throw sodium in water. If you go on YouTube and hit sodium in water, you see an amazing number. This is the best explosion anyone has ever done. So I actually have a nephew who's a high school science teacher. He gets kudos because he tells them that's his uncle who put that up on the web, and his kids have all seen it, and that he gets a little extra push from that. So there's a lot of really amazing stuff out there. And so some of the sources that are really good is the public resource organization is doing a joint venture. They're a nonprofit in California. They do this joint venture that they have gotten outside funding to support, and they want to digitize government films and make them available so everyone can get a hold of them. And they're in negotiations with the archive and other agencies. And so this stuff is actually on the, and they post it on the internet, and it's just available for people to use. So the public resource people are really just doing an outstanding job. There's a place on the internet called Internet Archive, and there's a site for it, which is generally meant to be for stuff that's in the public domain. Not always, but most of it's in the public domain, and it must have 100,000 films or more on it. Not all old films, but it's got a huge amount of stuff. All right, and that's been a good place to mine for a lot of work I've done. MSHA has a wonderful website where they actually have kept a lot of their old mine safety and health videos, and they put them on their website, or they put them in their archive, and they allow people to actually get these old films, even though they're not technically correct or not legally accurate. But I think there's a history there that's really valuable, and so I love their stuff. Department of Energy has a lot of stuff up. NIOSH has some stuff up, and hopefully we'll get more of their old stuff up. The U.S. Public Health Service is increasingly adding stuff. OSHA and state OSHA programs are adding more, although OSHA has a lot of stuff they could put up, and they just sort of haven't gotten there yet. Okay. And then I found my retirement project from 10 years from now. The U.S. National Archives, which is in College Park, about an hour drive north of here, and it's 20 minutes from my house. This is where the National Archives stores all the government historical films, and there's 150,000, and they have marvelous facilities. You just walk in and download them onto your computer, for the most part. And so that's how I spend rainy Saturdays, and my wife is working, and so I have a retirement project, Chip, as soon as I can retire. There's just almost unlimited amount of stuff up there, and more stuff's becoming available internationally. And I've only been really looking at English language things, and I'm only starting to look at Spanish language and some of the other languages. Oh, I do have one U.S. government Bulgarian film on industrial hygiene from 1957. No one knows why they made it. It was a Cold War propaganda piece. No one I know can read it or can understand it because it's in Bulgarian. So there's a huge amount of stuff, and so I think this is a wide open area for people to sort of mine if you're in occupational and environmental health. And if you're going to use this in teaching, there's a ton of stuff we can use to liven up our classes and have interesting discussions with our students. And the one thing I'm advising everyone is if you have stuff stored, old films, 16-millimeter films, VHS tapes, stored in a closet somewhere, don't let anyone throw those out till somebody goes through and salvages those, because there's a lot of great stuff. And if anybody has the Hamlet chicken plant fire video that was made in the early 1990s, I would love a copy. So there's a marching order. So setting up a YouTube channel for someone who was a sort of semi-Luddite, okay, it actually was incredibly easy. It took less than 8 hours to create the channel and actually put up my first collection of films. And then once it's up, there's not a whole lot to maintain it. I estimate it's probably an hour a week to maintain the channel. Now, that doesn't count the time to find new video or new material and cut them into a format and edit them down and play with them and all that. But currently, the channel over several years now has 800 films and film clips. They're mostly from government industrial sources. They're mostly all in the public domain, although I've had a few producers who've allowed me or asked me to put their material up on the site, and I'm happy to do that. Most of them are, they're all mostly before the year 2000. Most of them are 10 seconds to a couple minutes in length, although YouTube just recently, within the past year, is allowing users to put up longer versions so I can put up some of the longer films. But my purpose was using it for training and education, and so smaller, shorter pieces are much better as triggers for discussion and not showing a 35-minute film. Department of Labor put out a wonderful I don't even know what to call them anymore, DVD recently on respirators for healthcare. It's really wonderful, but it's 35 minutes long. It's one unit. You could chop it up into 10 different pieces and have a wonderful set of films for trainers and educators to use. And so that was the model that I was trying to use as I was thinking about this as a trainer. So if you go to the website, and there's the URL for it at the top, you go to the channel website, and there's two things I wanted to sort of show you. One is the search engine at the search feature at the top with the red oval around it. So for every video that goes up, you can put in keywords. And I put in keywords as a trainer. How would I use this film and this film clip, and how might I find it again? So I put those up, and you can use one or two or three or more words in there and try to narrow it down to see what might be useful for you. So there's a search engine feature that's actually pretty good on YouTube. The second thing is the green box down at the bottom. For every video clip that I put up, I include information for trainers to use, which includes where did it come from, what was the original film, what year was it made, who produced it, was it an industrial film, a government film, where did it come from. And then some history about how the film got made and what it was, what the importance of that film was at the time. And then I try to also link it to, if I was going to use this in teaching today, it has to have some link to what's going on today. Like the combustible dust film would be perfect to talk about combustible dust today. So I put in links to often NIOSH and OSHA and other places where trainers could get current information and use that to to sort of think about how to use this in their own teaching. Okay. And if you typed into the search feature some keywords that trainers might think about like this, there's a pretty good mix of films on the site. In a lot of areas, I've been trying to be pretty good about having a lot of variety for folks to be able to use if you're teaching. So there's actually 13 films on women workers, mostly from World War II, when women entered the workforce and men had no idea what to do with them. So, and it's all on film. It's really, really fun to watch. Okay. This is a film on, this is the bagging house in an asbestos mill in British Columbia that shut down in the 60s, but this is a 1960 version. So this is a live film of people handling asbestos fibers carefully, like we all would. You know, you just don't see things like that in most countries, luckily. Okay. This was a film I'll just skip this one from the sanitary. This is on water pollution from Pennsylvania. It talks about the importance of having clean water to create jobs and attract industry to your area. And this was 1951. So certainly good uses for this today. Now, if you go to each of the 800 clips, you will find a separate page for each clip where you can both view the clip up on the top, and then there's associated clips along the right. Both would be mine or anybody else's that YouTube would identify as being a related clip. And two things: one is the big oval at the green oval at the bottom. That is where you would find this whole additional information I provided in terms of where the film came from and other stuff about it. Usually you have to hit the show me more and the menu will drop down and you'll get all that information if you're coming into it through the individual film rather than through the channel. Most people I would say on YouTube never look at that. They miss it. I get lots of emails from people saying, well, where did that film clip come from? It's like, well, if you click on that, you'll see. But people never click on that. The other thing at the top that I thought was going to be really useful is there's a subscribe button. So people who are on YouTube can subscribe, and then you get notices that people who you've subscribed to have put up new videos. So I thought this would be a really cool way for a lot of us who are interested in this to kind of work together. Turns out it doesn't work all that well, and most of my subscribers are probably 12-year-old boys looking for sodium disposal videos. But here's some information from it. In the last 2 years, it's been almost 2.3 million hits. 1.25 million hits, I estimate, by the end of this year. And you can see there's the top 10 videos. Disposal of sodium is the top one. But usually there's the top 10 or 12 take up about a third of the hits, and then there's a long tail of all sorts of other things that get looked at. Okay. And if you look at where it goes around the world, about half of the views come from the United States, about a quarter from Europe, and a varying percentage from other places, depending on what's happening. When the nuclear reactors blew up in Japan, there was a huge spike in reactor-based nuclear issues on my website. I occasionally have found out about disasters before I hear about them because I see the big spike showing up on my YouTube channel. Okay. Here in the U.S., we can also drill down and look at views by state. And so usually California, Texas, New York are the prime states, biggest populations, big users. You see the top videos that are being used. And there's a cyclical pattern every month with the weekends and holidays, things drop off. And in terms of demographics, about a third of the users are women, two-thirds are men. And unlike what I've seen in other social media demographics, where it's often the young, my channel attracts older guys. And so it's skewed to the older age and rather than the young. So got to work on that part. Okay. And this is the channel subscriber. You get this tally, and I just never found the subscriber piece unless I'm missing something. It's never been very helpful. There's not a lot of of it doesn't drive people to the site. It doesn't seem to create a community. It'd be nice if it would. So got to figure that out differently. So, and just qualitatively, this is some folks I've gotten contacts. I've heard back from people how they're using it. I get a steady stream of high school students who have projects they have to do. Actually, a lot of senior girls have to do projects on women in the workforce, and so some of these World War II videos, when their grandparents were first coming into the workforce, they find fascinating, and they use a lot of that. High school chemistry teachers, and then university teachers in occupational and environmental health. A number of ERCs and government agencies have linked to sites or using them. A lot of union and university-based trainers, which is kind of where I came out of, and a lot of private consulting firms. And then I was surprised. I get a lot of inquiries from documentary filmmakers and PBS TV stations doing things, and they want old clips, and they're looking for stuff, and they find them on my site. And then a number of sites have been embedding these sites. There's one website on the periodic table, and it's really cool because they've embedded my sodium video as one of their cool things when you click on sodium. So it's kind of nice. The majority of the views are by individuals, though, and you don't really know much about them, except for these 12-year-old boys who are blowing stuff up with sodium. This is a really fun clip, and if you haven't seen Song of the Canary, I urge you to go to the site and hear what this guy is going to say about reproductive hazards, because it's classic. And so I'm going to just end here, and I urge you to visit the channel. You can get into it by working in Environmental Health and Safety Film, or go to the URL. I urge you to get into looking at some of these old films and think about how you might use them in your own occupational environmental health work. Contact me any way you like, and I'll be happy to talk to you more about this. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark. Were there any questions that would you have an interest to direct individually to Mark? Please.
My one question is there any sort of built-in bias for people who have more money, have computers, and more time on their hands? Does that bias exist? That's your question.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I see it in my real work, my day-to-day job with working with healthcare workers. We have healthcare workers who are home care workers, and other low-paid workers who simply don't have computers, don't have ready access, have heard about YouTube, don't know what it is. And so, but clearly this is where the world's moving to, so I think, and it won't be too much longer before access to YouTube will probably be what access to a telephone was in my day when I was growing up.